Hi, everybody. My name's Fawn, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Fawn.
I want to thank the committee, for inviting me to this wonderful event. And for the record, dear friend Terry,
yes, dear.
I think that you didn't get clean in the penitentiary in 1997. Didn't you mean
79?
Okay, that's good, because that's the first thing out of your mouth. And I thought, wait a minute.
I'm dyslexic.
Right? Okay. Anyway, you know, these history conferences really are something, because there's always some new person that gets up out of the woodwork and, you know, has another story to tell. So it's always changing. For me, I don't particularly enjoy them that much, because sometimes they open up old wounds for me, remembering a lot of the chaos and craziness in the days of service with regards to the conferences. And then I've got to go home and work my steps all over again. Get centered on some things. But sometimes I feel sorry for like the new people or just members that are just you guys, you know, coming to listen, because it makes me wonder how clear of a picture are you getting about our history. And maybe what you can imagine is that everybody has a different version of history, because they're sharing their experience about where they were at a certain time in NA's history, what part of the country had a lot to do with it, what was their main interests, you know, what parts of service were they focused on. So it's a variety of things. Like, I don't know the history of Atlanta, you know. I got clean in the San Fernando Valley. And I don't know the history of a lot of H&I, because I wasn't involved in H&I early on in my recovery. So it's really an interesting thing to hear people share about the history of where they came from and what was going on at that time. Anyway, I initially got clean in 1975, September of 1975, a court commitment, and I was given a choice of either jail or treatment. So I chose treatment, ended up in a rehab in North Hollywood, California, that was being run by Bill Beck, the fat addict in her little white book. Who has since passed. And it was there, there was about 60 residents, and every night they'd take us out in vans to different AA meetings. Now, they really couldn't send us to NA meetings at that time, because NA was very, very small. We had just enough vans to pack about 15 addicts into a van, so they couldn't, you know, unload 15 addicts into an NA meeting with no seventh tradition, and we'd eat all the cookies and drink all the coffee. And then plus there were always people fixing in the bathroom sometimes. We had those incidences, and you know. So they'd send us to AA meetings, and you know, who, depending on which meeting it was, they didn't really care about you know, they didn't really want us sharing our stories. they were all long-term treatment programs. So after about 9 months, you know, I was fully inundated with AA and AA meetings and AA literature. But I never really got the concept of addiction down or a thorough understanding. I really wasn't listening that well back then. I was a newcomer, and all I really wanted to do was go to the dances and look pretty. My best thinking was screwy, you know. I remember one time, I think I had, I don't know, right before my relapse, I wanted to go to this dance. And somehow in my mind, I had to have this pair of boots that I had seen. And I thought, you know, I am not going to be able to go to this dance without those boots. I got to have those boots. And my best thinking thought, who can I sleep with to get those boots, you know? Never thinking, you know, for a minute that, well, would God really want you to, you know, sleep with somebody to get a pair of boots? No, that never crossed my mind. That is like how far I had grown in Alcoholics Anonymous. So not too long after that, I relapsed, and I had remembered a couple of things people had said at the coffee shops after meetings. And so when I came back 6 months later, because I had had a reservation all along about drinking and smoking reefer, and I couldn't even do that. And after 6 months, I came struggling back, and I went to an NA noon meeting at the Survivors Club in North Hollywood. And I never went back to the other fellowship. I surrendered to Narcotics Anonymous. I admitted I was an addict. I accepted the fact that I was, and I surrendered to the programs, to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Things started changing for me very rapidly. You know, I really started to, I asked myself things like, what am I gonna do differently this time? You know, I don't wanna go back out. And also around that time, it was a lot of bikers, a lot of Chicanos, a lot of people coming out of the penitentiaries, and a lot of guys. So, and they were telling us, don't get involved in your first year. which was kind of hard to do, come on. So I stayed clean for 30, I mean, I stayed single for 30 days. hey, that was pretty good, man. And I met this guy who had some clean time, he had a job, he had his own pad. You know, all the things that really meant something to me at the time. And so I moved in with him. Oop, I moved, something happened. Maybe I'm not supposed to talk about him. I moved in with him after about, thanks. After dating him for a couple of weeks, that's what we did back then, you know, we'd date somebody for a couple of weeks and move in with them. And and he did something really wonderful. He took me over to his sponsor's house, who was Jimmy Kane. And I remember instantly feeling very, I had met Jimmy before, but, you know, I don't remember much about the meeting. Maybe I was too toxic, I don't know. But it was when Doug took me over to Jimmy's house that I was able to get comfortable. I was, you know, invited into the kitchen. We sat around the table, drank coffee, and, you know, and I felt very safe. It was a very warm house. He lived in a house right across the street from an airfield. He had a lot of books and a lot of tchotchkes, and it's also where our World Service Office was at the time. The phone was always ringing, I remember. But anyway, he found out that I was a secretary and that I could type. So next thing I know, I'm volunteering to come to the office and help out any way I could. And it became like a regular thing for me to go over to his house. Now, I got clean in July 21, 1978, and so since that day, I mean now about 30 days later, is when I started to, when it all kind of fell into place for me that what I was going to be doing differently is I was going to be getting involved in service. And it was really a wonderful time in our history because there was a lot of unity, people were, there were no titles or paying jobs in NA at that time. I mean, everyone was doing selfless service, you know. We would pile into cars sometimes and go out to institutions to share the message. It was nothing to drive across town to pick up a newcomer, take them to a meeting. You know, we would go all out for other addicts, for newcomers. You know, just before I came here, I went to go visit my son in jail. His case is pending. But as we were coming out of the jail, I saw a woman by the property window who was laying face down. Her body, half of her body was in the street and half of her body was on the curb, face down. And I went up to her and I said, "Are you okay?" And she slowly turned her head and she goes, "Yeah, I'm okay." And she had a big shiner. And I said, "What happened?" And she goes, "I don't know." She goes, "Someone's supposed to come and pick me up, but they haven't come yet." I asked her where she lived. I told her, "Okay, get in the car, I'll drive you home. But first we have to stop at Dillard's so I can do some shopping." Because I was coming here, right? I've worn the same thing for 2 days in a row, so I guess I didn't get much shopping done. She said that she was arrested for drunk and disorderly conduct in a casino. They handcuffed her and brought her to the jail and kicked the shit out of her and tased her. And I said, "Well, come on, let's go. Get up and let's get in the car and go." I said, "Hey, are you an addict?" She said, "No." I said, "Are you sure you're not an addict?" Because I really wanted to kidnap her, you know what I mean? She was so cute. And she said, "No, I'm not." She probably was, but anyway. As we're driving out, her boyfriend passed in a van, so I had to make a U-turn, drop her off. Turns out he was a guard at a prison, which I thought was really ironic. But, you know, that's the kind of service we used to. My idea of reaching out to the newcomer hasn't changed very much. I mean, it takes no courage to do something like that. You know, today I walk down the street, my eyes are wide open, and I'm always looking for people in trouble. So that's the way it was back then when I got clean. You know, people were really reaching out to the newcomer. And it was a wonderful, exciting time to get clean because there was so much to do. When I got clean, there was only NA, as far as we knew it, in California. And I remember the day that that letter came in from New York City, from Terry, when it came into the office. One of the guys that was there at the time, he had hitchhiked across the country from New York City to get clean in California, because that's the only place he knew that there was to get clean and stay clean. And he started crying when Jimmy showed us the letter and read it to us. And we were just so excited that, wow, there's New York. There's NA in New York. I had a relationship with Jimmy Kay. I was his friend. And even though I was new at the time, I was always watching him. I was always watching his example. And his example to me was he had a lot of integrity. He was an honest man, and he just loved being of service. He didn't want any trips around the world or to start NA in India. That would have been nice, but his whole thing was staying busy, you know, answering the phone, sending out starter kits. And what a lot of people don't realize is back in the crazy beginnings of NA, it wasn't unusual for addicts from across the country to send in requests for literature and then move and not leave a forwarding address. Doesn't that sound, why would the World Service Office hold back requests? So there was a lot of transient movement going on in our fellowship. You know, people weren't, you know, it's easy to blame Jimmy for not getting the literature, but the fact of the matter is if somebody needed literature and they didn't have the money, they got the literature. And I saw that because I saw it. And a lot of times I'd have to type out the letters or help write the letters. Or one time there was a letter that came in from Alaska. I don't remember the guy's name, but Jimmy said, hey, you'll like this letter. And it was a letter from a guy that was sent, had been sent a starter kit some time before, and he decided to start a meeting. So he had written this letter, and it was divided into 15-minute increments of time. So he was writing the letter while he was at the meeting. And, you know, it said, it's 8 o'clock. I got here and set up the chairs and plugged in the coffee pot, the hot water. 8:15, the literature's out. You know, the literature at that time were some IPs and little white books. And we're all set to go, you know. So 8:30, okay, the doors are open. You know, this went on for like till 10 o'clock, right? And then at 9:45, he says, well, looks like nobody's coming. I'll wait till 10. And then at 10, it was like, well, I'm going to break it down now. And he said, nobody showed, but I'm going to be here next week. You know, and that's the kind of membership we had. You know, people that really believed in Narcotics Anonymous, that really believed in their own recovery enough to start other meetings, to get other people involved, to spread this spirit of being clean in NA. And I applaud those members because it wasn't easy to do. It wasn't easy to be alone in a city or a rural part of the country and start NA. Jimmy was always very, very busy. I remember the conferences were really, it's weird because I don't look at the conferences and the business part of NA being memorable, loving, kind, or honest. They were always filled with fighting, a lot of fighting. These were back in the days when you had board members screaming, fuck you, across the room. You know, it was very uncivilized. A lot of angry people, and a big movement to kick Jimmy out of the office. I always thought it was because, you know, people saw dollar signs on the basic tax and they wanted jobs. But, and maybe that was so, I don't know. But I didn't think that at the time, you know. When I think of people thinking that Jimmy would have been like against a basic tax going out to the fellowship, I want to cringe. I mean, that is so against what Jimmy was about, you know. He just believed in the group conscience process. He believed in, I don't know. You know, I'm not going to get up here and defend Jimmy Kay every time I'm asked to speak at these fucking things. Because I know who Jimmy Kay was, you know. And we're lucky we had him. And as far as Danny Carlson goes, fuck that guy. He's not part of Narcotics Anonymous as we know it. That was a fucking ragtag bunch of addicts. Danny Carlson had an ego as big as this room. And he did not, Jimmy asked him, invited him to join our fellowship, and he flatly refused. He liked the limelight. He liked the radio and television broadcast. He liked being the center. There were no traditions. It was the most different thing as night and day. And when he was trying to get NA going on the army bases in Germany, he told his son, who was in the service at that time, not to get the two confused, not to get the two NAs confused, because they were as different as night and day. So if we're going to do a history of Narcotics Anonymous, let's do a history of Narcotics Anonymous. If we're going to do a history of every organization that has ever tried to help addicts, let's go back to the second century China where everybody was fucking strung out on opium, and talk to some of the nuns, the ancestors of the nuns who were probably running around trying to save fucking opium heads. Certainly there were no Native Americans around here strung out on dope. So to think that it started, that helping addicts started in America is ridiculous. So my feeling is, let's start our history with our history, not with some fucking Salvation Army or some Kentucky fucking prison. You know, it's so simple. Our history is so simple. And Jimmy had spelled it out so simply in our literature. And by the way, our literature in the little white book, I forgot to bring the paper with me, but just about everything in there, in the, beginning section, the italicized parts, is what Jimmy wrote. And it's stuff that is so profound and touches the hearts of addicts. It's been left in, you know? They tried to fucking erase his story, another look, at the conference one year. Imagine picking on a fucking story. You know, my feeling is all those motherfuckers wanted to get rid of Jimmy because, you know, he was the only one at the time that could stand up and, you know, talk about traditions. And anybody that was trying to break them, so many recovery houses he would approach and say, you can't do that, you can't do this. So, you know, the Bay Area was using AA literature in their meetings, selling it and using it for study. This is when we already had NA literature. And they were asked politely to stop, and they refused. And at the conference one year, it was decided that those groups who refused to stop selling AA literature and using AA literature in the meetings, they would not be included in the World Directory. Well, that motion did not come from Jimmy. I made that motion. You know, I had 3 months. What did I have to lose, you know? But, you know, they looked at me. This was a very male, egotistical, dominated service structure at the time. They looked at me and they thought, well, you know, what does she know? She probably got that information from Jimmy. And that's the kind of shit that Jimmy used to take, you know? Jimmy never talked badly about Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way. He had no animosity towards AA. The only thing that he believed in was that Narcotics Anonymous was a separate fellowship that could stand on its own 2 feet, that we could stay clean and in NA, and that it was possible. And see, new people like me took that to mean, okay, here's where it comes. I would go to meetings in my local area and say, you know what, fuck AA, we don't need them. You know, what are you all identifying as alcoholics for? You know, Jimmy wasn't telling me that stuff. Come on, nobody's got that much power. The thing is that because this is the time that I came in, that's what I was experiencing. Yeah, right, we can stay clean in NA. Fuck all these andas, you know? I mean, it would only be later when that I started to get into the steps and really explore my own and study the literature and the steps and work with a sponsor. But I was so busy when I was new with service work that and fighting a lot of these fuckers that I didn't have time to concentrate on my own recovery. So I want my years back. You know, that's really sometimes how I feel. I want my time back, Bo Soul. Anyway, I never understood why the literature committee was so vehemently opposed to the World Service Office. Now, a lot of it had to do with Greg Pierce, but you know what? This is the part that I just can't talk about. I'm sorry. It just gets me too upset. Today, look what we have. You know, we've got NA all over the world. It's cost us a lot of money to get it there. I've never understood why the whole process of getting clean and staying clean in NA couldn't happen and couldn't have evolved the way that it did here in this country. You know, we didn't need someone coming to us and, you know, spreading the message like Jesus or something. I mean, it just happened. It evolved. I don't know what we have today. I'm just so glad I live in a rural little part of the country, peace and quiet. I'm not going to keep coming to these history conferences because I just don't believe in them anymore. Some of the stuff I've heard while I'm here has blown me away. I'll tell you why Jimmy Kay never talked about being the founder, because he was a humble man. Okay? He was a humble man. Do you think he would go around and say, hey, I'm the founder? No. He would never do that. And he was the most honest, good person I've ever met. He believed in selfless service. He believed in, I remember one time watching him when we moved, because this is what we thought the conference wanted, get it out of his house. So we moved to a new place, and I remember he was so busy wrapping up the boxes. It was like a little assembly line of how we put the literature together to send it out, the starter packets. And he was so busy, and some know-it-all had wandered into the office and was sitting at the edge of the table telling him what they ought to do. Pretty much how Terry and I saw how this room was set up the other morning. You know, everybody was standing around talking about how this thing should go, and Terry and I were setting up all the fucking chairs. But anyway, so there was Jimmy doing all the work, and this person was just, and I remember watching it thinking, wow, why doesn't he answer that guy's question, you know? And then when the guy left, I saw Jimmy go like this, and he was turning his hearing aid back on. That's how he used to get things done. He wouldn't listen to all that kind of stuff, you know? He just wanted to, you know, do the work. You know, and why they couldn't have given him a little office to put archives together or put lick stamps or something when it was all over, why they couldn't do that is beyond me. The committee decided. That was the funniest thing I heard last night. You know, think about the committee. Who was on that committee? All the people that fucking kicked his ass out. So, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the truth. Some of you people have to say when you come up here and start sharing about what happened back then. It was ugly. It was ugly. And having to have been secretary at an area level, a regional level, and a World Service Conference level, I can tell you that there was a lot of ugliness going on, you know? A lot of backbiting, just mean-spirited shit. And if you don't believe me, go to an area meeting today and tell me that it hasn't changed. You know, come on. You know, we tell addicts to get involved in service, and then what do we invite them to, you know? I'm surprised they stay, you know. So I just take newcomers, and I take them to meetings, you know, and I tell them, hey, you know, just... When the key tags are being handed out and you see someone with a day clean, raise their hand, go up to them after the meeting and give them some literature and give them a hug and welcome them to Narcotics Anonymous. That also shuts them up too, you know. But because that's the part that feels so good, you know. And that's the NA I love. That's the NA I remember. NA is here to stay. It's not going anywhere, you know. NAS could crash and burn, and, you know, we'd probably have a lot more money to, you know, have world conventions at the Waldorf. I don't know. I don't think we're the greatest money managers in the world, but we do have... a tremendous capacity to give you know, when we really get this NA fever, we have a tremendous capacity to give and to share this message. And Jimmy always used to say that we all have a special gift, that creative action, you know, how we all can creatively think of ways to reach each other, to help each other. I can't say enough about Jimmy Kay because he was my hero. Everybody who hung out with him is still stayed clean. He just had something magical about him. I don't know. And anybody who has anything bad to say about him, stay the fuck away from me, please. Because I don't want anything to do with you. You didn't know him, okay? If you have anything bad to say about him, you didn't know him, you know? And quit talking shit about him and then saying, he did this for me, or I knew him, or I sponsored him. Bullshit. You know, if you saw the way that man dedicated his life, and you know what? As far as him being the founder goes, it's all there. It's all there in tape and in writing. When he shared in Santa Monica, he shared his vision of what happened to him and what he was told to do. And I believe him because he never lied to me. And as far as I know, he never lied to anybody else. And did he die brokenhearted? Yes, he did. He did die brokenhearted, although he would have never admitted it to you, because he wasn't like that. In fact, he went out just saying it's the will of the fellowship. You know, the will of the fellowship. Yeah, the rotten fellowship. It wasn't the will of the fellowship. It was a bunch of fools sitting in a room this big who decided and used other people to, pretty much like how it is now when we send our RDs to conference, you know? They just sit there and get manipulated and told what to do and how it's going to be. All right, listen, I got to wrap it up here. I just want to leave you with, regardless of what you think about me or how I say it, Jimmy Kennan was a good man. He was our founder, and he loved this program, and he loved addicts. And anybody who says anything else, don't believe him. Thank you for letting me share.
Actually, we have some time for questions.